You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
I'm Stacey Marie Ishmael, managing editor of crypto for Bloomberg News. And this is Bloomberg Crypto, a daily Bloomberg iHeart podcast. It's Thursday, July 21st. Today, my colleague Emily Nicole will be your guest host. I'll be back with you tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Bloomberg Crypto blogger Emily Nicole. The crypto winter of 2022 has claimed several casualties so far. But as of late, there's one name that's on everyone's lips. Celsius Network, the crypto lender that's now trying to save its skin through Chapter 11 bankruptcy. As prices spiraled and customers rushed to withdraw their crypto from the platform, Celsius buckled under the weight. Now we know it's amassed around $5.5 billion in liabilities, but only has about $4.3 billion in assets to back it up. Its largest creditor, Pharos, is connected to Sam Bankman-Fried, one of crypto's biggest investors. To give you the lowdown on what's happening at Celsius and what it tells us about rising heat in the sector, I'm joined by Bloomberg Crypto Senior Editor Anna Herrera and reporter Olga Karif. Hi guys, thanks for joining me today. So let's just kind of get started with the lay of the land, because not everybody listening to this might be super familiar with who we're talking about here. Olga, what is Celsius? What does it do? And you know, why is it different to so-called crypto banks?
Sure. So Celsius emerged a few years ago as a so-called crypto lender. So essentially, it allowed anybody to deposit their digital coins into Celsius and to earn interest on those coins, as you would in a bank, except for Celsius was not a bank.
Celsius has now filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
A major crypto lender went from managing billions in assets to filing for bankruptcy in just a matter of months. Celsius made headlines last month after freezing its customer accounts.
And this is the third major crypto platform in the last few weeks to file for bankruptcy, following similar filings from Three Arrows Capital and Voyager Digital. Pretty much all the struggling firms in crypto right now are blaming their situations on the current market downturn. But Anna, do you think that's a fair statement for them to make?
The current market downturn does not help, that's clear. But obviously, you know, there's some fault with the company themselves and some of the risks they took, which were pretty big risks, right? We're seeing with Celsius, obviously, they were giving very big returns to their customers and obviously in finance in general, not just in crypto finance. When you give big returns, it comes with very big risks. So they might have been a bit more prudent with the risk management, let's say, and that could have helped them, you know, withstand the heat now. Because obviously, you know, big firms have collapsed, but there are other big firms that are still standing and have withstood a number of crypto crashes. This is not the first and will probably not be the last.
And if I just may jump in to add to what Anna said, you know, it's interesting. If you look at Celsius bankruptcy filing, you will see that they've had a lot of issues even before the crypto crash that was started when the Terra blockchain collapsed. They pretty much, if you look at all the issues at Celsius, it's an array of issues that are all over crypto, but you rarely see all of them happen to one single company. You know, this particular company managed to lend money to Three Arrows Capital, which went bankrupt. They managed to give their money to a company that lost private keys to their funds. They managed to find a lender who gave them money, but after they returned the money, wouldn't give them the collateral back. You know, it just the list goes on and on and on. And it just seems like Celsius had a lot of issues before the crypto prices even started really dropping the last couple of months. But like Anna said, that certainly did not help them dig out of this hole that they were already in.
Yeah, and Celsius has been around for a while, right? It was founded in 2017. And so it's been through these winter periods before. Olga, how do you think that Celsius is perceived in the industry? Its CEO, Alex Mashinsky, has been known to accuse people of spreading FUD, you know, the crypto acronym for fear, uncertainty and doubt, on Twitter. And also recently, a former employee filed a lawsuit alleging that the whole business is a Ponzi scheme. So it's got a bit of a reputation here as well.
Absolutely. It certainly does. You know, Celsius, so Alex Mashinsky used to do an AMA with users about once a week. And essentially, this was a lot of chest pumping, and you would get a lot of people sort of commenting or calling in and saying, oh, you know, I invested all of my life savings or all of my retirement into Celsius. I believe in you guys. And of course, as we know, crypto is so volatile. All of the advisors say never invest your retirement money into something this volatile. So to begin with, I think it was a very dangerous place for people to put their money, as we are finding out now. And I think this weekly sessions where, you know, Alex Mashinsky essentially rallied the troops, they might have created a bit of a false sense of safety for some of the users who invested their coins into Celsius.
And Anna, this is like a proper industry problem, right? Mashinsky isn't the first CEO that we've seen attack people on Twitter for saying their platform's bad or is doing something wrong and then, you know, have it all come back to bite them.
Yeah, of course, crypto is a very Twitter-driven industry, as we all know. And so that makes it a bit more transparent and you can interact with big players directly. But then it also raises an issue that you have CEOs of companies that might be getting into trouble directly interacting with investors and giving them information that might or might not be true and making them want to invest, right? So you'd probably not see CEOs of other financial companies coming on Twitter and saying, hey, you know, give us your money. This is a great investment, in some cases, because you're not allowed to. And then, as you're saying, yes, of course, they do attack you back if you try to say something. In a way, it's somewhat cultish. I've had experiences when maybe you're trying to give them information or saying information that you've reported and you're pretty sure, or of course, you're sure it's true if you're reporting it. And that could help an investor make more informed decisions in a token that they hold or in something that they want to buy. And yet you get attacked as if, you know, it's personal to you. And obviously, to a reporter, it's not personal.
Anna, you and I also worked on another story about Celsius, you know, in the interest of transparency here, digging into a little deeper into the largest creditor, Pharos, which turns out to be linked to a little-known London-based hedge fund called Lantern Ventures, which has quite a few degrees of connection to Sam Bankman-Fried, the FTX co-founder. How has he been a part of the crypto meltdown so far?
He's very much been at the center of it, not because he's gone bankrupt. His companies have been one of the biggest creditors, or in some cases we've seen him both owe money to a company and also been owed money from that company. So he's very much been a big player. And so it was quite surprising to find that even in this case, there was a connection, right? Obviously, there was a direct connection because Alameda, the sort of hedge fund that he founded, was owed money, was one of the creditors of Celsius. But then there was also this fund who sort of no one kind of recognized. And so it was surprising to find that the founders of this fund, or the company that runs the fund, were also sort of indirectly connected to him, and that the CEO was one of the co-founders of Alameda, and that the many people that worked at the firm had worked at an organization where Sam had worked before. So there's this sort of big, long reach that he has, and that is quite interesting to explore because it sort of highlights how the market is interconnected. And obviously, the more interconnections you have, the more risk of contagion.
Thank you both. We'll be right back.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
And Olga, you've been covering Sam Bankman-Fried for quite a while. You've been speaking to him pretty much ever since he first arrived on the scene. Why do you think it's important to be tracking that presence across the market, and how do you kind of see it playing out at the minute? Is it what you expected to find when you first started talking to him?
You know, it's interesting. So in the past, there have been, well, a number of entities that have been very important in the crypto market and had deep pockets. They were, say, Coinbase and Binance and Sam Bankman-Fried's companies and a number of others. What happened in recent months is that a number of companies have been affected by this falling crypto prices. Actually, Coinbase is one example. They've been impacted by the decline in retail trading and the sharp decline in their stock price. Now, after we've seen this latest shakeout take place, we basically have a bit of a duopoly in the crypto markets. You know, it's Sam Bankman-Fried and Binance, you know, are believed to be the big parties that have the cash for bailouts and for, you know, expanding their network of business interests in this downturn, which is kind of what you want to do if you're able to. And so a lot of people are basically following this two now key, very important players in this industry to see what kind of moves they're going to make, who they're going to choose to save, who they're going to pass on. They all of a sudden have a lot of power in this industry.
Do you think that bankruptcy filings are going to become the go-to option for businesses who are in need? Because if we think about what it means to be decentralized, a lot of what has gone on over the last few months has shown just how far away crypto is from achieving that dream. Often these companies are turning to the centralized authorities and the processes to get them out of that. Anna, do you have any thoughts on that?
A Bitcoin maximalist, this sort of confirms their ethos, is that you should be your own bank. So you should definitely not give your money to Celsius to lend out, because it just confirms the whole point. But clearly, sort of the industry was so much more than just Bitcoin maximalism, and that what it's been becoming for many years. In a way, even though crypto wants to reinvent finance, it's not reinventing finance in a better way, but it's just sort of repeating the mistakes, which is kind of taking on too much risk and possibly doing some of the things that were happening in the financial crash, but with a new form of asset.
I think the troubles that we are seeing and have seen in the last few months, they really related to centralized companies. I mean, they were in crypto, but they were centralized companies run by specific teams. You know, they were incorporated and so forth. What I think a lot of crypto enthusiasts envision is they have this vision of decentralized finance, where apps created, they're basically code that sits on a blockchain and it runs everything, and there are no centralized companies or entities running the whole thing, and it's more fair and it's more efficient. In my opinion, this vision is still, of course, to be realized, but we are very slowly inching towards it. And I think it's going to be a big deal and very transformative when it's achieved at some point, maybe a few years down the road. And there are a few examples of applications of this decentralized finance already that are very successful. And one of the sort of takeaways from this crash for crypto diehards is that this is perhaps a good model, you know, this decentralized finance model, because what we've seen in this downturn and this latest crash is that centralized companies can be mismanaged and they can fail. But so far, at least, all of the decentralized apps have held up and they're still around. Even those apps that have been used heavily by some of these companies that are going out of business now and have declared bankruptcy, like Celsius, for example.
Can I just step in? I agree with what you're saying. I just think sometimes what happens is that during a rally, even people that are in the crypto space and that are diehard sort of DeFi people or decentralized finance people, there seem to be less criticism of the centralized platforms until the centralized platform crashed. When everything is going well, everybody's friends and like everything is growing and everything is great. And then sort of the risks get sort of shadowed. And then when a new crisis hits and people say, well, we told you you shouldn't have put your money on exchange.com because they get hacked. You shouldn't have put money there. So I think maybe what sort of a lesson that could be learned is here is like to try to make sure that during rallies, there's still a bit of sort of sense of self-criticism of the industry so that issues that are bubbling and that can be pretty evident are highlighted or sort of denounced by everyone before it gets taken too far.
Thank you both. It's been a pleasure to guest host today's episode. You can find more of Anna's work and Olga's reporting on the Bloomberg Terminal, on Bloomberg.com, and on Twitter at Anna Herrera and at Olga Karif.
On the next episode of Bloomberg Crypto, there's a perception that everything about crypto is novel and groundbreaking. The reality is a little more complex. There's lots of precedents, for example, for concepts like DAOs, or decentralized autonomous organizations, or what you might have heard as initial coin offerings. This is particularly clear right now as crypto is going through its own version of a Bear Stearns moment, which all begs the question, is DeFi really just inventing TradFi with more complexity and a sprinkling of blockchain? Or is there genuine novelty here? For more on these questions, we'll have two very special guests, Bloomberg Opinion columnist Matt Levine and Bloomberg reporter Muyao Shen. I'm Stacey Marie Ishmael, and this is Bloomberg Crypto, a daily podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartRadio. For more shows from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Email your questions, comments, or suggestions for the show to crypto@bloomberg.net. And you'll find us on Twitter at Crypto. The supervising producer of Bloomberg Crypto is Vicky Vergolina. Our senior producer is Janet Babin. Our producer is Mohammed Farouk. Our producer is Sharon Bariro. Our associate producers are Zainab Siddiqui and Ty Butler. Desta Wonderad is our engineer. Original music by Leo Sidran.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.